This is a podcast from the people behind the world's longest running football fans podcast, The Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and listen anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can have a free subscription where this lands straight in your email inbox, and you can go to thecelticunderground.substack.com. You can also have a paid subscription where you get some additional content, including the In Conversation podcast every week end and the Selecta written, which is basically a rehash of the E-Tim's Rumour Mill, oops, from Glenn Tintin from years ago. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with this week's podcast. This is the first time we've tried this, so if it's rubbish, it's rubbish. I don't care. This is live on Substack and Facebook at the moment. I have no idea anything about Facebook, so it's the Cup Final podcast, but it's also going to be a podcast if you listen to it afterwards. So if you listen to it afterwards, this is 7:56 on the day after one of the worst Cup Final performances in my lifetime. And I'm joined by Ross Hall, Andrew Smith and Eddie Pearson. So also, I've got a camera there and I'm looking at the computer here, so I'm not ignoring you. It's just because I don't know how to work this. How is everybody? Eddie, Ross, Andrew, how you doing?
Better than yesterday.
Still
but not
sore.
As good as it'll be tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm okay.
I've not really been on social media, but I did jump on to say about this, and I saw some Rangers fans, and it reminded me of when we were really shite in the 1990s, where our only satisfaction was Rangers not winning something. But with hindsight, that was just a shite way to be, that your only satisfaction was somebody else not winning something because you were too shite to win anything. So that's my consolation for any Rangers fan who tries to slag us off. Imagine being so shite that your only thing you win is the trophy of seeing your rivals not win something. So anyway, team for yesterday was pretty much as we expected because it was the team from last Saturday. Ross, what was your thoughts on the team?
Andrew and I had spoken about this when we'd done the preview podcast. I think we went one way on one of each of the players that we thought would be up for debate. Andrew went with Bernardo and Forrest. I went with Kuhn and McCann. So, but to be honest, I was happy enough for the team. I don't think anybody would have been, you know, particularly unhappy. I think you could see the sense in it. I think you said it there. It was the team that started last week, which I think was what we kind of expected would happen. So, yeah, no issues with the team. Just it was as expected. I suppose from my point of view, the only disappointment would be, and I said this last week, and Andrew brought this up at the end of the podcast, is I'd always like to find room for Sean McArdle, but with 8 subs, which is the bizarrest thing possible. Having a Scottish Cup that's 1 sub less than every other tournament just seems a bit odd, but hey.
Do you know, that has just passed me by, that principle that the Scottish Cup has 1 less sub than every other competition. Did you know that, Eddie?
I picked that up yesterday when I noticed that he wasn't being mentioned. But no, didn't see me. To be fair, I'm like, in terms of all that number work and stuff like that, I don't really care. I couldn't tell you if we have 7, 9, 8 subs on the bench normally. I just know that we can use 5, and that's the minute. It always seems as if there's hundreds of them sitting there. But after you get past about 5 or 6, I start to struggle with numbers, as you know. So I don't really think that high.
Yeah, the other thing I should just say for anybody who has decided to go on and listen, I've just realised it would be beneficial if one of the purposes of going live is that people can interact with us. So it'd be beneficial if we actually knew what people were saying. So I have put the Substack chat up on my screen. So if anybody is putting any comments on,
yeah, but they need to know that we're live because I'm not sure you went and told anyone we're live yet. Remember, this is the first time we've tried this, so. But nobody knows we're live yet because no emails come through yet.
Somebody has replied to you saying no email yet. Well, at least we know we're live. Yeah. Anyway.
But we're always kind of live.
It's not really any different to us. We need to be here at a time to do this.
Which is challenging for you, the man who's missed about six planes in his lifetime because he couldn't get there on time.
Hey, I've done all right, by and large, here. Been waiting for you, many a guest, I'll tell you. He'll be here in a minute. He'll be here in a minute, I promise you. He'll be here in a minute.
I usually am. Bang on, I'm usually there on time. just in time.
See all this kind of retrofitting. That's what I think sometimes when people complain about the lineup. It's just retrofitting to your opinion of how the team played. It was always going to, I did agree with you, Ross, and I think it was on the chat, the Substack chat. Somebody said, "What will the team be?" And it'll be the same team as last week, because he's not a guy to throw in a curveball. I think I said that on Friday, didn't I, Ross?
Yep.
So that was the team. And let's be honest about it. Even with that added sub the week before, Ross, McArdle wasn't on the bench then either.
Yeah, I know. And as I say, that's kind of just a
surprise. Yeah, that really disappointed me. I found that disappointing that he couldn't be after he played so well in Aberdeen. And then you've got to get rewarded if you come in. And I know this is a moot point, but this is part of the kind of, I don't know, I saw somebody saying the team was stale and they'd been together too long, and I'm not sure I agree with that, but like sometimes your freshness can come from within if you've got a McArdle. I think even other players love to see a young guy coming in and doing well. It gives them a wee kind of jolt, a wee jag.
I understand it can be difficult for a manager, so you've got a group of senior pros who no doubt within their contract have got some sort of, or might well have some sort of appearance money bonus type thing. And it can be difficult to then pick a youngster who in that moment might not be as good as one of the players in the squad, but you might think, well, do you know what? I think he's got the possibility of becoming a better player than that guy there within 18 months or something like that. Well, it'd be pretty difficult to say to a senior pro, you've got no chance of getting your bonus money today. You're not even in the squad. I'm going to put a youngster in the squad who, at this moment, I don't think is good as you. You know, in terms of squad management, that must be difficult.
I understand that.
But it clearly is difficult. You've got Pep Guardiola talking about down south that, he's got four guys sat at home. He doesn't like doing that. So, you know, I think you're right. Any manager is going to find that difficult. As I say, for me, you know, McArdle's, you're right, Andrew, it's a moot point that the lineup was the lineup. I don't think anybody would have looked at it and been overly disappointed or complained with too much gusto about the fact that that was the team that he put out. It was a team that, on paper, was capable of being Aberdeen. And so, you know, as I say, the only bizarre thing for me is that silly 8 sub rule thing. And obviously, going into extra time, you're allowed to then make the extra sub if you choose to. Having that 9th one, allowing us another option, sort of having an extra midfielder or an extra attacker or whatever would have been nice, but, you know, it doesn't exist and he wasn't on the bench, so we move on.
So, Eddie, the way the game started off, how did you see that going in terms of, were they too passive from the beginning or what were your thoughts?
Not really. I think initially, they're playing 5 at the back, right, for the off. You know, I heard somebody on Radio Scotland, when I go back to the car, talking about, they started with 3 at the back. It was different. No, they never. They started with 5 at the back, you know, and that put us under a bit of pressure up front. But there was a couple of balls played through early doors from Taylor, very direct, to try and get Maida into the game. And Maida had a couple of breaks up the park, and that looked relatively promising. It just felt as the game progressed that we started to find it hard, and we were a bit surprised that we found it hard, and my mentality started to shift as the game progressed into, this is a bit more difficult than we thought it was going to be, and we started to be more cautious. The first 5-10 minutes, I thought we were quite adventurous in terms of what we were trying to do. Now, I've not watched it back in detail. I watched the Sports Scene highlights this morning after Mass just to get a reminder exactly what happened from a different perspective. But I've not seen chapter and verse of it, and I don't think I'll bother. But I get the impression that first 10 minutes, we've got control of the ball here. We must have had about 95% possession for the opening 10 minutes of the game. And we were trying to move the ball forward, you know, call it vertical, call it whatever you want, but we were trying to play the ball forward as quickly as possible. And that was a positive. But once we started, they started struggle to get through, and their five and then their three, and to a lesser extent their front two, were sort of blocking us. I think our mentality shifted, and we started to find that this is more challenging than we were expecting. We're not going to roll over the top of this team, and it worked against us. I can't give you the exact moment when it shifted, but certainly the first 10 minutes was a positive attacking play for Celtic, and I felt, all right, this is going to go the way we want it. But it didn't work out that way.
Andrew?
Yeah.
I agree with Eddie. Actually, I don't think there was any real problems at the start. I mean, you expect finals can be cagey in the opening exchanges. And actually, what surprised me is the stick that Bernardo's taking subsequent to the final, because I thought he was the one midfielder. He was making himself available. He was playing those wall passes. He was trying to kind of pick a way through. I actually thought he did okay. I thought McGregor did okay. The two centre backs were okay. Taylor was okay, and the rest of them were dreadful. That was the way I read it. But I thought initially that's the way you try to tease them out. They weren't coming out, but you try to tease them out and try to kind of just feel your way into the game. And I think they were doing okay in that sense. But it just the meandering just. Even when they got, you know, you thought start of the second half, Aberdeen will lose a wee bit of heart from just losing that goal just before half time. Celtic will crank it up here and they'll get the second goal and it'll all be fine and dandy. And it didn't really happen. And that was the kind of surprising thing. I think it was the second half was more surprising than the first. And even in the extra time, Celtic didn't find a way. You expect them to find a way. They didn't step on it. They didn't step up, you know, in a cup final, a chance to win a treble. There was nothing. Some of the players to me looked like, you know, it has been a 55-game season and they were showing it. They were showing the wear and tear for that.
I'm going to come back to you on the Bernardo stuff maybe later on as we start to talk about further into the game. I thought Bernardo looked really plenty of energy, and I don't know whether I was being a bit, he was flattering to deceive you, but I'd agree with you initially. He looked like he was very involved. But from about the 65th minute, maybe 75th minute, I thought he just fell apart and every pass went to the wrong guy. And, you know, but we can come back to that later after the substitutes and things. But I would agree with you initially. But I think the lasting memory of his performances was at the tail end of his game. And I think that's why people are giving him such a hard time.
Yeah. Well, he got an injury. I think that was part of it. Him and he went down and you thought his race was run. I think that was just before Forrest. I know he got taken off after Forrest, I think, didn't he? Did he? Like, yeah, but I think he got some kind of knock, so he maybe wasn't. He was.
He able to carry on. He got replaced by Shute, and Taylor took up that position, and no doubt we'll come back to that later. But that was an interesting decision as well.
Yeah, yeah, he did. I think he did that the previous Saturday as well, didn't he? Like, brought on Schlupp and played Taylor in midfield towards the end of the St Mirren game, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, at the beginning, there was three times, you know, when we do that passing about the back with centre-halves, there was three times where the ball went to Scales and he was sitting reading a paper or something. I don't know what he was doing, but anyway, the arrival of the ball seemed to come as a complete surprise to him, and it just went right across his feet and beyond, and he had to scramble over to get it.
There's one in particular in the first half when that happens, and to be fair to Scales, because I remember exactly the situation you're talking about.
I remember.
He lays the ball off to McGregor, and McGregor has no issues at all, and there's plenty of room. And McGregor just pings it straight back to him. Scales has passed it to him and thought, right, I'll start looking at what's happening over to my left here, and doesn't he realise that McGregor's just pinged the ball straight back to him? And that kind of reflected a couple of decisions that McGregor made. And I don't think McGregor's great. But there was a few times where, take the ball and turn me. You've got a time to turn me. And if you're not going to turn me the ball at all, and you're just going to play it straight back to the guy who gave you it, what's the point of passing it to you in the first place? I just couldn't get my head around that.
We do that all the time. Where somebody passes to someone and they pass it straight back to them. I mean, yeah, that happens 100 times a game for us.
Passing stats are brilliant because of it, but it doesn't go anywhere.
Teams, I know, but my point being, for it to come as a surprise that it's coming to Scales, I maybe need to introduce Scales to the Celtic team.
No,
I couldn't comprehend why it would come as a surprise to him. I just thought he wasn't paying attention.
No, there was one time that happened. There was one time that happened that he was surprised to get it. Like, I accept that, but I think it was one. It wasn't three times. There was one time that happened. But Celtic do
it
that.
It was three times because the guy next to me was, the guy behind me was going mental about it.
Wasn't he my brother, by the way?
No, that was when I moved seat.
He was complaining about your swearing so close to a really young boy, he was saying.
That was at the end when Yang was deciding to go for a walk across the pitch and meandering about for, I've no idea, and Brendan Rodgers couldn't work out either, which was the bulk of extra time.
Didn't you? You said we should try and have a structure to this podcast and do it sort of sequentially, but now you've jumped to Yang and stuff.
Well, it's only because he mentioned his swearing, and there was two things that kicked me off with my swearing, and that was Don Robertson, which was just the most. I hate it when, if you criticise referees, people then jump on and go, that's not the reason we lost the game. I know it's not the reason we lost the game, but I thought Don Robertson was an utter disgrace, and we'll maybe get to that. And it was because he mentioned the swearing. So I was swearing at Don Robertson and Yang, who Yang was doing my box in the whole of extra time. Anyway, back to where we were. Andrew, I just was a bit concerned that we were being very passive.
It was just a continuation of the St Mirren game in a lot of ways. It was like, if you want to know why Jimmy Tilleen, where he got his tactical kind of notion from, or where he got his plan, he watched the full 90 minutes of Celtic against St Mirren, knowing that it would be the same team, and knowing how St Mirren were able to, like, Celtic were so blunt, St Mirren were able to kind of curb them. Again, you have to be physical. You have to be, you know, you have to be on it, and you concentrated. St Mirren were all of that, and Aberdeen just did the self same ploy. They just went for the self same ploy, and we're starting to see it more often now. We're starting to see it more often that you can kind of clip the wings of this Celtic team, you know, like if I was a manager, I don't know why people complain about the way Aberdeen played. I would have no ambition. I used to play Championship Manager and I put Henrik Larsson in midfield. I played a 4-6-0 because I just didn't want to lose anything. By any means necessary. I've never been one for pretty football and all that. I know that's not the Celtic way and all this palaver, but just win. Just win. And it's if anybody sets up like that against Celtic, then that should provide you opportunities in other ways. If you're sitting so deep.
But my argument against that is Aberdeen didn't set up to win the game. You're in a cup final, which they set up to not lose the game.
But then not losing the game gives you a chance to win it. And hey ho, do you know what they did? You know what it looked? You know what it? I know we're jumping. Sorry, Eddie. I know we're jumping here. But do you know what it looked like when it came to the penalties? And about seven people have said this to me. It looked like Aberdeen had been really practicing penalties and Celtic hadn't.
I think I'm bad for jumping off on tangents. You have went for full time. The question was start of the game. We're now on penalties.
Sorry.
We've just wiped out 130 minutes of the game. So I'm not being letting last week. As I say, I'm bad for going off on tangents, but I was enjoying that sort of thing. It's not just me. To answer the initial question, start of the game, Eddie, you were right. 3-5-2, no danger. That was a 5-3-2 for beginning to end, pretty much. Apart from the occasion where, obviously, Shaden Morris came on, they started to push people up. When Aberdeen came out the tunnel at the start, that's probably as close as a lot of their players got to the halfway line, to be honest. So, you know, I agree with what Harry's saying. In the sense that Aberdeen had a game plan. That game plan was keep it tight. You know, if they'd have got a sneaky goal at the start, which, you know, their first foray into a half was basically long ball into the half, play for the second ball, and then after that, we got control. And for the vast majority of the game, controlled it. But the start of the game, I thought we were fine. I thought it was a typical game against a stuffy opponent where it felt like we were trying to solve the puzzle of how are we going to break through this? I think you're probably right. After about this, you know, even when we scored, it was starting to get that point where you were feeling we looked quite bland. There wasn't really much dynamic in terms of none of the midfielders were doing anything wrong, but none of them were really doing very much right in an attacking sense either. None of them were driving up and beyond either. There wasn't any great deliveries going in the box. Kuhn cut inside about 100 times. And normally, I quite like the fact that Kuhn's got that lovely curved delivery to back post. But it was just loads of passes inside. And then you were saying about the scales thing. And I agree with both arguments in the sense that, you know, we do that probably more than we should. But I agree with you, Eddie, in the sense that he's gave the ball to McGregor. And McGregor had the freedom of Hamden to turn, you know, have a good look. And his instant reaction was play that pass back. And that was what the game subsequently became. It became loads of sideways passes, loads of players standing, minimal effort to try and drive at someone or to run beyond someone. So, it was a sticky game up until even the goal we scored, it was an awful goal. In fact, it was two awful goals that pretty much summed up the game. So, to start the game, nothing bad, but it wasn't great either, in my mind. Hopefully that answers that question.
Brian's still with us, or is he? Like, he's done a scales and kind of...
No,
does he realise he's part of this team? The conversation to you, Brian.
I told you I would disappear at times when I was trying to get... So we're definitely live on Facebook, but for some reason I can't work out why we're not live on Substack at the moment. That's what I'm fiddling about with while you lot are talking.
Fair enough.
I did say that at the beginning, that, you know, got to pay attention to the producer.
The producer. I'll do my wee Ronnie Corbett. Where's my glasses? One for our younger viewers.
Yes, even Ross is mystified by that one. He's too young for that.
it starts to go wrong pretty soon into the game, right? So after the initial burst of energy, we've said that we think that we'd accept the team lineup. We didn't. I would have liked Forrest to start, if I'm being honest. I hate a Kuhn, but I can understand why Kuhn started ahead of Forrest. But I'd have liked Forrest to start, and he's probably thinking, Nate Hodd Forrest reserve, bring him back on later on in the game. He can get his medal, he can get his glory, but he's probably not going to be a starter in that match. But if I had the choice, I'd have done it that way. What did you think of Scales starting ahead of Trusty? What are we seeing there about Scales starting ahead of Trusty in the final game of the season?
Well, I think he's the first choice centre-back again.
Yeah.
I think there's no doubt about it. And you really do wonder, if they hadn't assigned Trusty, you'd think Narowski, you know, look at what we've seen of him. You know, you could imagine him. Why could he not be the understudy rather than Trusty? I mean, Trusty's maybe no longer this world if they get any kind of decent offer for him. Well, I don't think they would necessarily get their money back in anybody they signed last summer, so that's pretty damning, I would say, about what happened last summer.
I think we would get our money back. We would get more than our money back from Trusty. We would get more than our money back in Eden. We'd get more than money back in Ingles if we sold any three of them in the summer.
All Champions League experience now.
All Champions League experience. He just scored 20 goals this season. Some of them have been in the Champions League. Trusty's best performances for Celtic were in the Champions League.
Yeah, but his worst ones were at Dens Park.
Yeah, so if you're going to, you know, if an agent was pulling together a highlights reel for Trusty, then it's going to be a highlights reel that's got all his Champions League stuff in it. You get your money back for him at least.
I'm not so sure.
If a decent scout or recruitment person was looking, they'd bypass that video and look at his games and ones that have been flagged as concerns, which would be Dens Park. And also you would ask the question of why is he playing behind Liam Scales?
Yeah.
But then, as somebody said to me this week, the funniest thing of listening to people out with football is they assume that there's people with a strategy and a system and intelligence within football, and invariably there's not.
No comment.
So,
it's interesting though, is that somebody went and said this week that Narowski and Bernardo are apparently brilliant in training all the time. They're brilliant in training
consistently, good in training.
Yeah, right. And like if you were just picking purely on training performances, they would be getting a run.